Broadcasting from the commodity capital of the world, Zurich, Switzerland, this is Insider's Guide to Energy.
This addition to Insider's Guide to Energy is brought to you by Fidectus. Go to www.fidectus.com for more information.
Welcome to Insider's Guide to Energy. I'm your host, Chris Sass, and this week we have an exciting show. We're going to talk about all the possibilities and tools available to the solar industry. Our guest is Christopher Hopper. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the show. I'm a little bit uncomfortable because normally I start with a dialogue with my co-host, and he's not here, so I'm a little bit diving right into the deep end. So let's start by figuring out what we're going to talk about today. So maybe a little background about who you are and what company you work with.
Yeah, I'm Chris Hopper, co-founder and CEO of Aurora Solar. So we're a software platform for the solar industry. So what we do is we help solar professionals through the process of designing and installing solar, designing, selling, and installing solar installations. And Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, where is Aurora located? Where is your corporate headquarters?
The headquarters is in San Francisco, California. But at this point, a lot of the team is all over. So we've become a distributed company during COVID. So we've embraced that. So now we have a lot of talented folks all over.
And so you said you're the founder of this company. What did you do before you started Aurora?
So co-founder, so there's two of us. My business school classmate Sam and I, we started the company together. What did I do before Aurora? Maybe I can start with a bit of a personal background. Originally I'm from Munich, Germany. And I made my way west, if you will, via London. So I spent 4 years in London studying electrical engineering, so engineer by training. And during that time, a couple of my friends of mine and I, we came across this big issue of electrification in the developing world. We learned a pretty staggering fact, and there's more than 1 billion people worldwide without access to electricity. And so being young and idealistic and engineers, we thought, hey, there's a big problem. We should be able to do something about it. And so basically we set out to solve that problem, to find the right technical solution paired with the right business model to make a dent in that and help people with access to energy. And so, there's a longer story there too. This is sort of the precursor to Aurora, but basically spent 2-3 years doing that, installing off-grid electrification solutions in Rwanda in particular. And one of the ways by which we did that was through solar. So we did a number of solar powered projects. There was a couple aha moments for me there. One of them was actually just experiencing firsthand the importance of energy and electricity in really modern life, right? Having grown up in relative privilege in Germany, I don't think about energy. You just go get out your chair, you flip the switch. Nowadays you even hit a thing in an app and it just happens automatically, right? Lights comes on and you don't think about it. Being there in those villages, living with the sun, seeing, how life is without, was a big aha moment for me, really. Still motivates me today. And the other thing actually was, we did a number of projects throughout the years. And the first time around, we bought solar panels at $3 a watt. So for a typical solar panel, that might be $600. And then the next year we came back, we bought panels again for $2 a watt. And so it's a 30% difference in decline in price. And I was like, wait, did the first guy, did he did he overcharge us or what's going on here? But no, it's actually this price curve of solar that's been continuing since, right? The price of panels has come down a basically order of magnitude in a decade, and that's just has fundamental implications downstream. And so that was the other thing for me. I was like, well, there's something happening here in solar that is and can be quite huge. And so those are two of the early insights that way predate Aurora, but in a way laid the foundation to what we do today.
So it sounds like you and some of your colleagues did some charitable kind of work, and you got some hands-on experience, I guess, in engineering and designing solar systems. And the logistics of doing it perhaps in a third world environment, which is probably a bit more challenging than perhaps doing it in a first world economy where you could just run to the hardware store or run down the street when you need a piece or an adapter or whatever. I assume you could probably find it most Home Depots these days. So how did that translate to moving to a software company? So I assume you finished up your education. You said you went to London and you did some work there. And then what happened next? Just curious.
Yeah. So this was during my time in London. So alongside my studies, I then got the chance to come to Stanford Business School for an MBA. So I moved to California pretty much exactly 10 years ago, September of 2011. That's where I met my co-founder, Sam. And the two of us became friends first and started talking, what might we do after business school? And both of us had a bit of an entrepreneurial bent that we discovered. And so we just started talking about different ideas. And one of the ideas that came up based on the experience I had in Rwanda was actually starting a solar installation business focused on emerging markets. The idea being you don't have to go far off grid for energy access to be a problem, right? Even in bigger cities, oftentimes the grid's unreliable, it's expensive, and yet you have a lot of sun. So that was a very simple calculus. Hey, solar should make sense here. And so during business school, we put together a pilot project, designed a 50 kilowatt system, so 220 panels about, for a school in Nairobi, Kenya. And then that was sort of our summer internship. We flew down there and we installed the system. So we did everything soup to nuts, from finding the project, hiring local engineers to help us with installation, sourcing suppliers, shipping everything there, raising a loan, and then ultimately installing the system.
So how did you fund it? You said you raised a loan to fund that?
Yeah, we found through our network private investors to fund the project. The mechanism is fairly similar to how a lot of solar is financed today. Is, you know, people save on their bills, so rather than paying money to the utility, or in this case for a diesel generator, they take those savings. Some they keep, and then some they pay to investors in the form of interest on the loan. Right. So, we found a number of private folks who are willing to back us and back the project, which is still running today and actually generating savings. And it's been sort of the quintessential solar success story.
So what was the life expectancy on that project? You're saying it's still running today. Is this like a 30-year project? Is this like a 10-year project? Or what were you planning when you put it in?
I mean, typically you sort of assume 20 to 25 years for a solar installation. Some things like the inverters you may have to replace earlier. So that's typically more of a 10, 12-year typical life. But solar can produce even beyond that. So it's a long-term thing. What I meant by still producing today is not so much a surprise that it was our first project, and I'm happy and that it, you know, there's a lot of learnings in it. But ultimately we did a good job, I guess. It's been a great story for us, set us on this path, but also for the client, which makes me happy that worked out all around.
So let's turn the clock ahead to where you are today.
Yeah.
So you co-founded Aurora. So your Stanford business school partner and you decided to start this company.
Yeah.
So who's your demographic? Who's your target? I don't assume you're building a whole software as a service platform for Nairobi. So who are you building this for?
Yeah, actually, let me connect those because we're sort of missing a crucial piece of the story.
Please.
In the middle, right? So how do we end up from Nairobi to now a US or currently US centric or certainly not emerging market centric design software. So we basically, after this project, we came back to, for our second year business school, and we got a lot of inbound interest, actually, because the system, like I said, worked out nicely, and they're now saving on their bill and no more power cuts because we put batteries in place as well. And so we got a lot of inbound inquiries, people asking, hey, does solar make sense for me, for my home, for my building, for my business? Should I go solar? How much would I save? How much would it cost? And we're like, well, we don't know. And that is, you know, it's what I would call the central question of solar. Like, where does solar make sense and what makes sense? And you need to answer that question over and over again. For every installation you do, yeah, you need to answer that question. Sometimes even more than once, because you might quote five systems, you close one. So you do five times of work for one, right? So it became clear to us that we needed a scalable process to answer these questions, right? We had this Excel spreadsheet, the sizing model that was Frankensteining out of control. And we knew, you know, we can do another project. That's fine. We can do another five, another 10. But if we want to take this business to real scale and do dozens or hundreds of these projects, we need a scalable and a data-driven process. We need a good and accurate way of making these design decisions. And so that's how we came up with the idea or the realization that we needed software to support our growth and our scale. At the same time, we also looked at the industry, right? We looked at where solar was going. 2013, it was a growing but still niche somewhat industry. But all the forecasts were pointing up and up and to the right. The sort of big headline that Bloomberg uses is 50 by 50. So 50% of world energy generation is going to be wind and solar by 2050, with solar being a big component of it. It's actually now they upped it to 58, but I guess that doesn't have as nice a ring to it. The point is, how do we go from that, you know, niche industry where solar is less than at the time a percent of our energy mix to where it's a main way in which, by which we generate electricity, and where it's an outsized part of our new additions in terms of energy generation, right? And it became clear to us that there's no way of getting from where we were and even where we are today to where we want to go without a scalable, data-driven process and what makes for that, you know, software. So that was really the big aha moment, both bottoms up, experiencing the pain point firsthand, and top down, you know, seeing where we're headed and where we need to head, importantly too, and helping to bring about that future. So that's why ultimately we started Aurora back in 2013. So connecting to today, we don't do any installations anymore. We're not emerging markets focused, but rather we're a platform that helps solar professionals, make those design decisions in a scalable manner, help them with the sales process, the design process, and so forth.
So are you working more with residential solar or PV park? I mean, big development type projects. Like who's your demographic that is generally using your platform today?
A good question. We do multiple things. We're generally in distributed solar. That's our strong suit. So we do residential and commercial solar, small companies and large. So many of the top U.S. solar companies are amongst our clients, but also many small businesses, local businesses that serve their community are using our software to design better solar.
And so how big is that market that you're going after?
I mean, it's big and importantly growing, right? It's a moving target. That's the thing that's always made this exciting for us. So from a business perspective too, is because we looked at the market 2013, I think it was about $13 billion across all of solar in the US, which is a decently sized industry, but by no means the largest out there. But what's more important about solar is really where it's going, right? And solar is growing at 10, 15, 20% CAGR, right? Annualized growth rate. And the cost curve keeps coming down. And so as costs come down in the commodity markets, volumes go up, right? As volumes go up, manufacturing volumes go up, prices go down. Prices go down, volumes go up. Now more consumers are aware of solar. Now acquisition costs come down and volumes go up, right? And so there's that, I like to call that the flywheel of solar, which is in motion. And so it's not just about where it is today. Since then, the industry is about doubled, but it's also where this is going, right? And there's the world shifting, and again, needs to shift to renewables. I believe there's going to be a...
So it's a big market. The slope of the curve is high. You've built something where you see a lot of demand coming. I think what I heard you say is that, you know, you're a B2B, so pretty much installers or companies that are selling solutions would come to you. You help them, from what I picked up along the way, perhaps through the sales process, through HAPS, for the engineering process, through pretty much the entire back-end process of being a solar installer. So you become a virtual engineering team for them and sales team. Is that kind of the vision of what your platform does?
Not so much engineering or sales team. I mean, we power their engineering and sales teams, right? We don't knock on doors. We don't sit at kitchen tables. We're a software company. And so we make the tools that their sales and engineering teams would use, right? Then we make, for example, a new product that we just launched at a conference this year called Sales Mode, which is basically a best-in-class interactive proposal. So a sales rep can use that to show the homeowner how solar would look on the roof, co-design the system, walk them through the process of going solar and the different options they have in terms of designs and financing. So we're powering that conversation, but we're not the ones having the conversation. Same for the downstream engineering work. We have a lot of powerful nitty-gritty tools that let the in-house design teams design optimal solar installations for the customers, but we're not the ones doing that work. So we're about empowering solar professionals who are out in the field. And so...
So let's talk about some of those tools, the downstream, the engineering type tools. I think in the pre-show, you were mentioning some kind of interesting AI and other technology y'all have brought together to deliver that. But maybe you can share a little bit about what that all means and what tools you have.
Yeah, it's actually a very, it's a simple question. Should I go solar? Just a few words. But to answer that question, it requires, to answer it well, right, requires a lot of technical depth. There's a lot of analysis that, if you want to do it well, goes into answering a question. And so that's what we specialize in. And so what we did is we have this set of technologies that all work together to answer that question. And what I mean by that is there's a multi-step process. So to answer, should I go solar? One of the things it depends on is, well, what's your energy consumption? What's your bill, right? If you're paying $10 a month in electricity, probably not worth going solar because there's not that much you use, not that much to offset. If your bill is $100, $150, now we're talking. But it also depends, well, how much do you use? When do you use it? How much do you forecast to use, right? You might get an electric vehicle, for example. And so we have a set of tools there to understand the energy consumption of the home and to model that out. Next, you need to understand the roof. A lot of solar goes on roofs. Every roof is different. So we have some pretty sophisticated and actually patented algorithms to quickly design roof structure.
Do you use drones to measure the roof? Do you fly up and take pictures to get the measurements, or how do you get the measurements of the roof?
So we don't fly drones ourselves. Some of our clients do. And then what they do is they bring their own imagery, they import it into our software. What we do is we're agnostic of sort of input sources. So we have a set of different imagery providers. We use Google and Bing. We have partnerships with, but also companies that fly planes to capture imagery, for example. We include LiDAR data sets and so forth. So we incorporate multiple data sets make those accessible to our clients. And then the client would model it in their software. Other parts that we do is also now simulating these systems. So how do they behave given the weather data? How much energy is a system going to produce in a given location based on the roof geometry, the orientation? There might be a neighboring tree. And then obviously the weather plays a big role. And then how does that energy production translate into savings? So we have a very detailed calculator, financial engine that calculates both the utility bill, sort of represents the rates, and then calculates the savings based on the production. So these are different engines that tie together to really come up with accurate solutions, right? You need to go through every step in a rigorous manner to be able to answer that question well.
So it sounds like there's a lot of elements that I've heard you describe. You also mentioned that your company started in 2013, so you probably have some historical data that this has probably evolved, I would wager, that you do. So how do you go back and score? So let's say, do you have, you know, like a Nielsen cable box type of thing where you would go back and you have some sensory data that from projects you've done in the past to see how well you're scoring against your projections? Or how do you do that?
Hmm. So currently we don't do any, it's called post-installation monitoring. It's certainly an interesting area, but the way we've done it is working with our clients and we keep evaluating our engine. Some of it is just math, right? How a utility rail bill gets calculated, we can validate that independently. Some of it, all our models are bottoms-up physics-based models, so they're you know, have some internal validity. But we do go back and we look at system production across systems and evaluate how our engine stacks up. And we also have done that with external parties. NREL, National Renewable Energy Lab, has done some of those validations. We've also worked with engineering firms to run studies on our engine. And they've plus our clients, actually, that's really the real test, is our clients keep telling us, hey, this is, you know, I'm using Aurora because it's...
But your client would be excited. So, you know, if I get a 50% savings in my electric bill, I'm super excited. But mm-hmm. if there were 75% potential, there would be no way of knowing. I'm not trying to pick on you. I'm just looking at that going, yeah, mm-hmm. you ask me subjectively, I'm going to say, yeah, I saved a bunch of money. I love these guys. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if there's more on the table, right? That's, I guess, my thinking. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you do that through the math and just looking at the potential. And, yeah. and you kind of do proof points without needing like Internet of Thing kind of sensors. You can do the proof points just through basic calculations, what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah. So I guess there's multiple parts to this. So what I meant is it's not sort of that part is not a machine learning big data model where we back something out from a big data set, because we know how solar panels operate, mm-hmm. how we know how inverters operate. And so we can, how the heat, what the dependence is on heat and irradiance. And so we can model that out. So there's validity to just, these are established models. Having said that, we do validate them against actual system production. So we've done that both internally and with external partners. So that's how we know these models represent the systems accurately. But our clients also, you know, they know it's actually a really important point here. You want to quote with confidence, right? You don't want to overquote, because you don't want to overpromise, because that's going to cause downstream issues with the person you sell things to. But you don't want to underquote either, underpromise, because then you might lose the deal to someone else. And so our clients have a very good sense over time what works well. And so that's really the bread and butter, or the thing that makes Aurora special, is the accuracy we can generate by having these best in class engines linked together. And that's really what drives a lot of value for our clients.
How hard was it to build a model that's universal? I mean, you know, obviously, let's say you're in the Midwest versus Arizona versus, I don't know, Boston versus San Francisco. I would imagine that there's quite a bit of variance in understanding each of those local markets. So you have a global platform or a platform that users would use. How hard was that to get around, or is it pretty simplistic and the models are pretty easy to work with?
It depends. The models generally scale quite well. I mean, laws of physics work the same way everywhere. So we can, you know, in terms of how we simulate these systems, that's very similar. The differences lie more sometimes in data sources. So do we have coverage of all the input data sources for different geographies? And then sometimes around the economics, if you will. So some local jurisdictions might have a certain incentive that works a certain way, or a utility rate in Canada might work different to one in Wisconsin or in California, right? And so sometimes there it's a bit of a product question. How do we generalize that in the best way? But it's all solvable. But I mean, that's our bread and butter, is to make those calculations work for
are those data sources readily available to a commercial company like yours? Do the providers and the regions have like APIs and things like that, so you can get that data in real time of energy pricing and rebates and things like that? Is that all done electronically, or is there some intervention required from your team?
I mean, largely they are. Certainly North America has really good coverage. There's different pieces of that, from utility rates to imagery, right? Something like Google, for example, has imagery throughout. Then it's a question of resolutions. Once you go to rural areas, you may want to supplement that with sort of more purchased aerial imagery. So yeah, that's generally not a big problem. LiDAR data, we actually aggregate and we manage ourselves. And sometimes it has involved writing to certain municipalities to mail us hard drives with data that we then upload and process. So it can be somewhat cumbersome, but on the whole, it's relatively widely available. More of a question once you look at international markets, because it's different vendors that require different integrations. But yeah.
So talk a little bit more about the AI element. You mentioned that a couple of times. So what specifically does AI do to help with this problem set?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the process of designing solar goes through these different stages, right? There's the energy consumption modeling. There's a roof modeling. There is the system design, so panel placement and connecting everything. And then the energy production modeling, and then the financial calculations. A lot of those steps are pretty, you know, you can model out bottoms up and are deterministic. And yes, you need to validate them to, you know, make sure the calculations do what you want them to do, but you can model that bottoms up. One area that's been really difficult or hadn't been really solved to address is that of roof modeling, right? How do you automate roof modeling, right? So if you have an image of a roof, how do you convert that to a 3D representation of the building? And so that's an area that was sort of the missing piece. That's an area where we've invested at this point 4 or 5 years almost of engineering time in automating roof modeling of at scale. And so we have a machine learning team that basically uses all the roof models in the database, which at this point are millions, to automate that roof modeling process. And so once that's in place, we can now automate the entire process of going solar, because we have the roof. We have optimization algorithms that can design optimal solar installations already. We have then the simulation of the system and the financial calculations. So now you can plug it all together, and all you need is an address and electric bill. And now the software can take it through the entire process, modeling the roof, modeling consumption, modeling the roof, designing the system, and then showing the savings. And so that's a huge breakthrough for us and for the industry. It's taken us a long time, but we have a new product that we're just launching called Lead Capture AI, which does just that. So you show the website, ask you for the address and a few inputs, and takes you through the entire process of going solar.
So it sounds like, have you compressed the buy cycle by adding this technology to what it was before you guys existed? So if I went to a mom and pop solar guy that just does, you know, the engineering, does all the work, and had him come out and inspect my house and come back with a quote, and then I want to do the install, have you compressed this buy cycle?
Effectively, yes. I mean, that's always what we've been about. And maybe to add a little bit of more context, important industry context. If you look at a typical residential installation in the US, say it's $20,000, less than half of that is the equipment. So if you spend $20,000, the equipment that goes on your roof might only be $9,000 or so, or $8,000, $9,000, which is kind of crazy. That's a lot of overhead that sits on top. These are referred to as soft costs. And so, you know, panel and equipment prices have compressed a lot, but soft costs haven't. And so the next area of cost reduction, the next way of making the whole solar stack more, affordable, is by focusing on soft costs, right? And so that's what we're focused on. How do we bring down overall costs by making it more efficient to go solar? One example is, before Aurora came around, truck rolls, site visits used to be very common. So an installer would do just that. You'd call them up and say, hey, can I go solar? Should I go solar? Someone would drive out. You know, maybe it's 30 minutes, maybe it's an hour and a half to drive out to your roof, climb on your roof, take measurements on your roof. You know, sometimes they literally fall off, but that aside, they go down, drive back to the office, plug it into the computer, now design stuff, and they call you back, you know, 3 days later. You're like, oh yeah, this should work, kind of ballpark. or maybe it doesn't, but not a very efficient process. That alone, the studies that show it's almost $1,000, $800 or so in cost for you for an installed system, right? So that's one example. The other one is just what you said. It's like, it's about compressing that cycle and letting us, letting our clients actually importantly focus on other parts of the business, right? There's really necessary parts that they focus on, including having the kitchen table conversation and addressing concerns and questions of the homeowner. But wherever we can automate things and create efficiencies, we will do that. And then thereby we can bring down the cost of sales.
I guess what comes to mind to me is at a certain point, I could just go on the web if I know that I want solar because it's becoming pretty mainstream. I mean, I would argue 5-10 years ago, you still had to convince me of the value prop, right? Today, I mean, if you're in Denver and you're putting new development and you're going to have solar in your rooftop here in Switzerland, I mean, I don't pass a barn without solar on it here. I mean, everybody's pretty much got solar. It's pretty well expected. So I don't think it's so much a value proposition. I may make decisions of whether I want my roofing tile to have solar in it. Do I want to put solar on a roof? I mean, there's different decision points that someone might take me through the costs of, you know, paying more for the connectors or for the tiles and what the longevity is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that, you know, if I've gotten to the point where I'm calling a solar guy that you've got to convince me that I want solar. So it may be an easier sale, I would think. And mm-hmm. to me, it's straight economics. I mean, as a homeowner, it's there. Now, an interesting conversation I had a number of weeks ago with someone that's in the solar industry, and they make the hardware for the solar panels. A good friend of mine works at one of those companies. And he said, you know, in North America, and he's also here in Europe, but he's a North American like myself that relocated to Switzerland, that, you know, the challenge with the model is an individual home model only works in middle class and upper middle class homes, because if you look at the average install price of a solar rooftop, mm-hmm. that works really well when your house is worth $150,000 up. But when you take the, you know, $40,000 is the number he threw out of a solar install, you're not going to put it on a low-end house. You don't have the economics to do that. So it works well in higher income neighborhoods. Is that your experience as well? Is this a wealthy upper middle class to middle class phenomena, solar? I mean, I know you started in third world, but let's look at the North American market where you are today.
I would look at it differently. It's not so much... I don't think it's the value of the house that matters directly. It is to some degree a function of how much energy you consume and how much you pay, right? To my previous point, if you're paying $150 in electricity, there's a lot of cost to offset and to, you know, reduce that by, and then you generate savings. If you only have a small electricity bill, that might not be the case. So that can correlate and typically does correlate with.
But I mean, I don't argue that solar isn't the answer. I just think that it might be a larger solar farm producing it for someone that doesn't have the resource to put solar on the roof, because you've got to get that loan or you've got to get the financing. Even if it drops your electric bill in half, you need the credit to get that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like that's another point there too. There's a tax credit in the US, which, you know, lower income households can't always monetize directly. Then there's leases for that. So it's a kind of a complicated question. The overarching thing, though, is that, you know, solar is becoming, by and large, the cheapest way of generating electricity, right? And so that will ultimately trickle down to cheaper energy costs for the consumer. And so it's not, you know, there's certain policy questions around low income and versus, you know, higher income neighborhoods and homes. But on the whole, you know, cheaper electricity costs benefit all Americans, not just the ones who are better off. And so,
I just understand that you know the market. I'm not asking you for the politics of it. I just assume mm-hmm. you're looking at potential market size and you would look at that demographic. But what came to my mind is you get to a point where I don't really need a local solar company. I mean, I could just find a web company and buy directly with your technology. So pretty much you could work with a large North American or global installer or global company. And it would almost seem from what you're saying that I could almost self-provision, because if you can get imagery of my site and you got my address and stuff like that, do you need that middleman? I mean, I get that it's part of your market today, but is there a world where this becomes just a virtual service, just like an Amazon where I buy something, I buy solar for my house online? Or do you think there's still a middleman at some point?
There'll always be a middleman because, you know, Amazon can ship stuff to your door, but if you get a couple of solar panels, wires, racking, inverters, you know, there's
you. No, but you could schedule a technician from a website, yeah. Right? So, I mean, I can get the pre-pricing, do all the sales thing and say, hey, I want this thing. You send me a mock-up of what it's going to look like. I click OK. And, you know, 2 weeks later or a week later, some guy shows up and starts installing it, right? I mean, that. Yeah.
And so some of the tools we have will empower that for our customers, right? So there's definitely a lot of efficiencies to be created in the sales and design process to a point where I think increasingly solar will be more bought than sold. At this point, you know, at least in the US, there isn't as much consumer awareness as there is, for example, in Europe, right? Where every barn you say has solar. I mean, where I'm from in
Switzerland.
Yeah, Germany too. You know, I sat in the train recently and I looked out and I was like, whoa, right? There's so many solar installations, and it sort of previewed for me also how the US market might look in a couple of years. But so there's efficiencies to be created there, and more consumers will buy than they need to be sold to. But there's still those, you know, those questions that, for example, you mentioned, like, oh, should I go this way or that way? Do I want it in the front of the house, the back of the house? Should I go storage? There's another question there. What does that mean? So I think there's still room for a sales process, but there's a lot of efficiencies to be created. And importantly, there's also the installation and then the maintenance of these systems that needs to happen. So there's always going to be an important role to be played for solar companies, small and large.
So how do you play with other renewables? So I've lived in Switzerland a few years, but before I left, I wanted to do a couple of things in my house. I was passionate that I wanted a geothermal system in my house. I lived in the mid-Atlantic states and thought that would be helpful for both my heating and my air conditioning. It was very, but when I was going there, also at that point, you know, totally electrifying my property with the system, I also looked at solar there. So do you have components that interact? I mean, it would seem that if I have geothermal, I'm probably more likely to have solar than perhaps someone that, you know, only wants oil or wants gas in their house today. How does that work with your system? Is that a future product for you, a consideration, or is that not really relevant?
I wouldn't say it's not relevant for some of the reasons you mentioned, but it's not where we're focused. I mean, we're not modeling. I mean, there's so much to that, how you generate, consume, electricity or energy as a whole. And so we can't do everything. What we focus on is solar. Now, where there's an exception is, you know, to some degree, there's a little bit of things like an electric vehicle will change your energy consumption quite drastically. So understanding that and modeling that is important for us. Or if you, you know, lighting or your energy, you know, if you use electricity for heating versus gas, you know, that's a big impact on your energy production. So some of that modeling we do. And the other area is storage, right? So a lot of solar increasingly gets sold with storage. And so, modeling those together and allowing for the sales design process of those in a unified manner is important. So storage is one area where we do, bleed out of solar, if you will, or capture.
Well, I mean, it'd be hard to put in a solar system and not imagine that you're going to also put storage in to take advantage of it. Do you sell just plain solar? Do people buy solar without batteries for the most part in their homes?
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, buy it. It's increasingly common to at least get quoted batteries, but you don't need to. Like the standard way of going solar today is still a grid-tied system, meaning when you produce more than you consume, you feed it into the grid. When you consume more than you produce, you draw from the grid. So you sort of can think of using the grid as a battery, which can work well and efficiently. The problem is, of course, if the grid's down, if there's a power cut.
Yeah, in the mid-Atlantic, we seem to have a lot of storms and they seem to get more frequent. So, you know, pretty much everybody I knew had generators, right? And so battery would make sense.
Yeah. In fact, just today, one of my colleagues, she's in Northern California, there was a storm and she was out of power for most of the weekend, right? So you have storms, you have hurricanes down in Florida, you have blizzards in Texas, you have wildfires in California, right? And so, yeah, it's increasingly, you know, a factor, right? And so that's why we've seen a stark uptake of storage attached rates, also driven by a decline in storage costs, right? So that's a similar thing is happening in storage, in batteries, what's happened in panels a decade or years before. But those two factors are driving the adoption of storage. And yes, you're right. Increasingly, it's the sale of solar plus storage.
So I guess you lead me to my question. So I'm a big proponent. I'm a co-founder of a company as well, and we have a software as a service platform. And one of the things I would make as from the cheap seats out here in podcast land is that your users get the advantage of all your R&D across them. So smaller operations obviously don't have the kind of development teams that you have and the years of experience that you have to modify this. So you just talked about a couple of trends that are taking place, whereas, solar panels are considerably getting cheaper. Batteries getting cheaper. I think, depending on the current administration, at least in the US, there's incentives, there's not incentives. It really just kind of changes with the tide there, what's going on and where you happen to be geographically. So are there economies of scale that your customers are getting? Or, obviously there's kind of the quick ramp and the easiness of having a software as a service platform, all that goodness. But what are some of the R&D advantages they get for going with a company like you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd say a core value prop, right? People can sign up and get best in class software just right out the box. And that's a huge advantage. I mean, compared to a decade ago, the larger companies in the space had invested quite heavily in software and built in-house automation tools and software platform to do just this, to get, somewhat accurate around the designs. Today, you don't need that. We have, this point, a 100 plus person engineering and product and design team that all they do every day is just this, right? We have PhDs in electrical engineering trying to figure out how do we model this better. We have a whole set of a team of machine learning engineers to automate the roof modeling. We have folks only thinking about the modeling the financials of these systems, and right. And you get all that out the box. And so in a best in class platform, integrated process with best practices baked in. For example, for our sales platform, we spend a lot of time not just talking to our clients, but also our clients' clients, understanding what are the factors that matter to a homeowner in going solar, and then baking that into the product. And so there's a lot of efficiencies that get created, a lot of value gets created for our clients, and ultimately, their clients, which is the homeowners. So that's really the big dream. That's what gets a lot of us out of bed, is by doing our work, we can make the whole industry more efficient and thereby bring down the cost of solar and, help our clients put more solar on roofs.
So as we're getting up towards time, I have just a couple thoughts. So do you have exclusivity in regions, or how do your customers differentiate, right? So if you're kind of the back-end engineer and you've compressed and you've got that as lean as possible for them, mm-hmm. and two competing folks in the same region want to go bid on a piece of business, what differentiates them?
Yeah, I mean, it's the core interaction with the customer, right? I mean, yes, with the software, with the technology, but we're not the one speaking with the homeowner. So the level of service they provide right from the first touch points when it comes to acquiring these customers to being embedded in the community. And, once one homer goes solar, how do the neighbors get quoted solar? What's that process? The install quality, of course, right? And then also afterwards, there's a lot that our clients do. We're behind the scenes, we're enabling, but we're not the ones, never will be the ones, doing that, which is essential.
All right. And so the last kind of question is, where are you guys as a company? So you've been around since 2013. Are you still a private company? Are you private equity held? How's the company structured today, and where is it going?
Yeah, no, we're still a private company. It's been a long road, but in a way it feels like we're just getting started, a little bit like the solar industry as a whole. We are now venture capital backed. So we've, raised three rounds of financing, series A, B, and C in 2018. What was it? 20 last year. And then this year, our series C. So we have some fantastic investors, on board who are big believers in us as a company, but also solar as a whole. There's now 250 Aurorans, which is incredible to see. You know, when we started out, there was four of us, and now it's a real thing. And what's more is we're empowering many of the folks out there who put solar on roofs. So at this point, more than 60,000 systems every single week are designed in our platform, which is incredible.
That's pretty cool. And so you gave a pretty big number. Where do your development teams sit? Are they in San Jose or San Francisco where you sit, or are they kind of mixed around the world wherever the technology pockets are? Or where do you have your development teams?
So historically, we used to be all in San Francisco. Recently, during COVID, we made this change that a lot of companies did towards a...
So a lot of people at Tahoe enjoying like nice lake views when they're coding.
Tahoe, Hawaii, everywhere. So we really opened up. Our footprint is almost exclusively North America, so US and Canada, yeah. But coast to coast, from Montreal to California, to Montana,
awesome,
Florida, all over.
That's pretty exciting. So yeah. So I guess in the interest of time, let me make sure I understood the. I'm going to repeat back what I think we've talked about today, and you tell me how wrong I was. But what I think is, as you guys have developed a platform that helps the solar industry, it's a B2B platform where it helps them everything from sales process, where they get some tools that they need to downstream kind of engineering process and stuff, and help them accelerate the process. It's still the local business is the front. They're the one that owns the customer. They're the one that has the interaction. They do the installation. They do the support and the follow-up. Mm-hmm. And what they're getting from going with you is they're getting economies of scale. So you're doing over 60,000 of these installs. How often was that? 60,000?
Design. So, right. Not so all get installed. These get evaluated, but yeah, 60,000.
Yes, you're doing about 60,000 things a week. What you see is the demand and the growth of this is just, got a straight line up, and, so you see a lot of future growth and opportunity, and your mission is to accelerate solar deployment and give tools to make it easier for companies to do that. Does that capture what we talked about today?
That captures it really well.
Well, I appreciate it. I really like the journey. I wouldn't have recognized from your dialogue that you started your journey in Germany. You don't have an accent that you came from over here. But I also like having done a number of companies in Silicon Valley throughout my career. I like the Stanford connection there. That's always a promising one. And I have friends that have gone there, and most of them have done projects in Africa. So there's got to be some sort of Stanford Africa thing going on. But I think that's pretty remarkable, and I hope that your school and your project continues to produce power there for years to come, so that you have success stories to tell in future podcasts. So I want to thank you for joining us today.
Of course. Again, thank you for having me. Really enjoyed the conversation.
It's been a lot of fun, and I always love technology. As you can tell, I geek out a little bit on the technology, but it's pretty cool stuff. So thank you.
Makes two of us.
And for our audience, you spent another hour listening to Insider's Guide to Energy. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation as much as I have. If you enjoy these conversations, please share it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have yet to follow us on LinkedIn, follow us on LinkedIn. You'll never miss a bit of what's coming out on Insider's Guide to Energy. Have a good day, and we'll see you next week.